Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Okay, my very special guest, Thomas Sheridan. ThomasSheridanArts.com is the website. Now, I don't know what more questions to ask you, Thomas. I've basically gotten what I wanted. However, there's another element here that just occurs to me now, is that how do you spot the symptoms of psychopathy in yourself? How many other different ways are our lives infected? Because you were talking about proto-psychopaths in the last segment there. So, you know, how do you find out whether or not you are a proto-psychopath? Do you notice that your thinking has changed, or you start to have these compulsions that are not your own, a reality that simply doesn't exist seems to be your motivation sort of thing?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of those kinds of things. An ego running wild would be a common one. But another one that I noticed was that you would start making – you look at your friends – you know, look at the people you become friends with. You know, if you're hanging out with people who are all like jerks and superficial, and they're all like, you know, arrogant and nasty, if they're involved in things that are unethical and then are trying to pass it off as being spiritual or enlightened, that's a good way to think it. And that doesn't mean you're becoming a psychopath. No one becomes a psychopath. You just, you know, the only psychopaths are born, the rest of us are normal. But, you know, we can become, everyone in our lives at some point has been a jerk or a creep. That's just how it is. But when you're in a psychopathic situation, like a culture, you know, that kind of a thing, you have to be very careful. Again, it will infect you. It doesn't mean you're becoming a psychopath. It just means it's creeping up on you, and you're not being true to yourself. You're not being honest with yourself. You're not following your own dharma in life. You're following your ego. There's nothing wrong with your ego. It's just that's the only thing in the driving seat. So look at the people around you. If you're working in a job and your old friends have kind of vanished, and you're surrounded by, you know, people who are very aggressive, nasty, self-absorbed, narcissistic, you know, thrill-seeking, it's, you know, that's not a good idea. If you're also involved in a religious community, this is a really good one. A lot of people, you know, don't realize how psychopathic religious communities are. They're probably the most psychopathic of them all. You have to be very careful. If you get, you know, if you're a Christian or you're involved in some kind of, like, spiritual group, you have to be very careful, because a lot of these spiritual groups are like that. They do wicked and cruel and, you know, malicious things, and then they think it's okay because, you know, they're spiritual. You know, it's almost like I say, you know, they stick the knife in your back and they say namaste to your face. You know, that kind of a thing. You never get, you know, that kind of thing. Be very careful. This is a real sort of like devil's kind of hole to fall into. You know, so look at the people around you. Are they creative? Are they kind? Are they feeding you? Are you trying to impress them? That's a good one too. If protos are, they never give you energy. They just take it. Same with psychopaths. So are you constantly trying to appease them? Are you constantly trying to look cool? Are you feeling insecure around them? You know, this is important stuff, because if you're with people who are sort of like on your level, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, whatever, it's never a give and take. It's you're just relaxed. You're just at ease. You're never trying to impress them. They're never trying to impress you. They take you for what you are. You take them for what they are, and that's the end of it. When you're in a situation where it's sort of like a vampiric, idea, where you feel like you're having to be somebody, or you're having to play a game, or you're having to sort of live up to their expectations of you, whether they be spiritual, following a spiritual canon or a creed or a dogma, whether it be a sort of a high-rolling big business thing where you're like involved in these sort of like, you know, unethical business moves, and then you go at the end of the weekend with these people and you get coked up and you like that kind of a thing, and it's all very high intense instant gratification. If you see yourself falling into that trap, this is a moment where you must start to self-reflect. You must start to like sit, look at yourself and say, am I on a path here? You know, a great way is talking to yourself. Am I with the right people? You'll probably find when something goes wrong in your life. Suppose, like, a family member passes away, or your wife becomes sick, your boyfriend becomes very ill or has a car accident. The ones who really care will actually go and help you. Someone years ago in New York said to me, the real difference between a fake friend and a real friend is that if your car breaks down on the highway, a fake friend sends you a taxi, a real friend comes and collects you. So always observe the people in your life and measure yourself according to them.
You know, I was just thinking about my mates. So I got like three mates pretty much at the moment. You know, you usually can't maintain too many close relationships. I mean, I've got acquaintances and friendships with people from all over the world of all different walks of life, but there's three people that I principally hang out with, basically principally because of proximity. There's my mate Jono, who's been my mate for a very long time. And when I was a broke-ass fracker on the radio, and I really couldn't afford to feed myself for most of the time, he'd see me every other week, every other day, and take me out for food or take me to the movies or out for coffee or stuff like that because he had the resources. And we were good friends, and we can sit together literally for like an hour in silence, not saying a word and not get uncomfortable, kind of thing. And there's my mate Mike, who's a really good guitarist, and we get together at his house usually on the weekends and play some music together, record stuff, and come up with new songs, and pretty much every other week we create something. And then there's my mate Dan, who's always been very generous and has always invited me around to his place and stuff like that, you know, giving me coffee and what have you, and showing me new stuff on the internet and asking me questions about, you know, the radio show and what have you. And I was just thinking, you know, you can't really maintain too many intense relationships. It's just not possible, like, in terms of the time involved. With being involved with people, but I think I've actually got a really good group of friends, you know, at the end of the day. And there was a time earlier on, a couple of months ago, when I was going through some real harsh times, and you would not believe, Thomas, just how many emails, phone calls, Skype chat messages I had from people just going, oh my God, Vinny, are you okay? You know, it was great. And I've suddenly realized, you know, after having this conversation with you, how freaking blessed I am to not be surrounded by superficial fracks, basically. That was half the reason I got out of the general workforce in the first place. I couldn't stand any of them. They weren't freaking real.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you have a crisis in your life, you discover who your real friends are. It's as simple as that. Simple as that.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, here's the Vinny Eastwood methodology for finding out who your real friends are. Mess yourself up big time, okay? Like, fake a foreclosure or fake a death in the family or something like that. All those people who call you up and try and support you and stuff like that, you go, okay, you stay on the friends list. The people who don't say a freaking thing to you and don't help you out at all, and if you tell them about it, they go, oh, yeah, well, that's bad, and don't really care, never see them again.
A good marker in a proto as well, I found, is that there's also a kind of a proto who loves sharing their problems. They're high drama, the high drama proto. Everything's high drama. And they'll give you this, like, oh, my life is terrible. Oh, everything's bad. Everything's rotten. And then you'll turn around and say, you know, something happened last week. I have this, I'm getting these really strange headaches. And then suddenly, oh, yeah. And then they go back to talking about themselves.
Yeah, that's called being egocentric.
Yeah, they suck an energy from you. That's all they want.
Yeah. And see, and this is a good thing, is another good piece of advice as well. Don't complain about your own problems too much, you know, unless you actually really need help with them. I found women do this a lot. Have you noticed that, Thomas? They're more than willing to discuss their problems and the things that have frustrated them during the day. And then you go, okay, baby, I'll try and sort that out for you. And she goes, no, don't. She's like, what, are you addicted to the problem? What are you allergic to solutions? What's going on here?
Allergic Solution. I like that's a great title for a song.
Yeah, in fact, I'll write that down. Allergic to Solutions, and I will see if I can come up with some lyrics for a song like that. Here we go.
Well, allergic to the solution sort of sums up society, doesn't it? It's like, you know, and it also sums up a lot of sort of alternative sort of like movement as well. There's a lot of people out there within the scene are obsessed with the negativity, with the sort of like, you know, everything's a problem. And they don't want to talk about the solutions. It's all doom. That's a good angle to play into it. They're allergic to the solution, but boy, do they, you know, are they addicted to the doom?
Right, so you're allergic to solutions, you're focused on doom. Yeah. Hey, here's the other part of it as well. I find it very ironic that if you talk about problems, let's say we're talking about psychopaths as a problem facing society here, are we offering any solutions? And we've offered some very, very simple ones here. For example, stay the frack out of their life. You know, if they steal something from you, take something from you, wrong you in some way, you will never get justice. Just move on. Find good, decent people. And that's basically the best you can hope for. Because, you know, you can't think like them, right? Just think about this. Let's say somebody did something bad to you, right? What's the worst thing you'd do to them? You'd expose them, maybe do a YouTube video about them or whatever, okay? That's about the worst that you'd do. This person will kill your children, okay? Don't freaking do it. I can tell you from experience. You can't beat them. You'll only wind up killing yourself. And all
that's why also people who want to show down with the globalists, I don't think they fully understand what they're dealing with. You know, we see a lot of these truthers who make these videos where they show you their weapons, especially the ones in America where they show you their guns and weapons. I mean, that's their own business if they want guns, good luck to them. But they, you know, I'm ready for the new world order kind of thing. No, they will erase you like, you know, a gnat. You don't think that they're worried about it. You know, they won't come with you with guns. They'll do something like they will put, you know, mercury in your drinking water, and that'll be the end of you.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
They come at you sideways, and they use best part of yourself against you.
Yeah, and they do it very businesslike and casual. Nothing to it. You know, just like when you see the Nazis and the Holocaust and all the murders of people in Russia and Ukraine, the paperwork became burdensome. So they hired IBM to develop a computer software system that could properly run a database on who, the many people they killed, who they killed, and why. It was just business. It was just like, the concerns weren't humanity or ethics. The concerns weren't, you know, decency or the sheer evil of it. The problem was administration. So the psychopaths and the Nazis just came up with, say, let's contract out IBM to build a computer system.
Yeah. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how they think. They're not like us. It's just business.
Now, here's another thing. I'm a businessman by nature. I'm entrepreneurial and what have you. For me, business is a different thing. For me, business is about creating something that doesn't exist and satisfying a gap in a marketplace. You know, like the show, for example. There's very few truther radio shows that are based on, you know, full-on emotional transparency and a bit of comedy. You know, I don't see that very often because, well, basically, I'm really open because I want people to know what makes me tick, so that if I'm ever in trouble, they'll know about it. Or if I'm ever acting like a douchebag, they'll pull me up on it. You know what I'm saying? You got to be really, really open, at least in my opinion, in this type of format, if you want to stay yourself. because that's another great fear that I have, and I think this happens to a lot of people. And I was talking to Roy from Rush FM down in Hamilton about this the other day, is how having any kind of fame or having any kind of recording device like this microphone right here, that's something that can turn you into a monster if you let it.
Well, if you let it, just like fame can do that, just like having a drop-dead gorgeous like model girlfriend can do it to you, just like cocaine can do it to you. Doesn't mean you have to go that road. That's a choice. That's a choice. And I'm glad what you said there about business and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm a business person too, but I'm a merchant, just like you're a merchant. See, the thing is that, like, human beings are business people, but only psychopaths create corporations and conglomerates. You understand? That's a difference. That's the big difference. Conglomerates and big corporations are psychopathic. Business is just like human beings trading. You know, all, you know, that's why I'm a big believer in small business, helping the small business locally. I mean, that's another thing too. A good way to fight the psychopaths is not to stockpile weapons, but it's actually shop at the shops in your local community and don't be buying things on the internet unless you can't get them locally. But I mean, like, this is why the globalist psychopaths hate cash, because when you have cash in your pocket, where does that get spent? It gets spent in the shops in town. It doesn't get, you know, but they want you, all of us on credit cards and no cash. So, like, you know, it's good to have both. It's good to have all the different means. But you see, the whole thing is that we have to learn to use their weapons against them, not to become like them. And that's why I'm a big believer in things like, you know, small business. Small business is wonderful. I think, you know, more people that are breaking away from the system, from big corporations leaving them, and starting their own little shops or stores or, you know, whatever, little software companies or little development businesses, radio shows, good luck to them. That's the way to beat the globalists.
Yeah, I mean, my girlfriend Sarah, she just started up her own business doing gardening for people, and now she's got, you know, more than enough jobs to support herself, less than a month after quitting a job for a massive, massive gardening company that had a big reputation, you know, because people like the fact that she's nice and she gets the job done well. That's business, baby. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. If you subscribe for as little as $1 a month, you could subscribe for up to $100 a month if you really felt like it, if you think the show's that really important to the survival of humanity, which it is! It is! I'm telling you! We'll give you some commercial-free archives. So if you don't have the time to listen to it live, it cuts out nearly 30 minutes of listening time when you cut out advertisements for a two-hour show. You know, it actually saves you time. So think about that. You compile that. Half an hour a day, if you're listening that much, winds up being 2.5 hours a week over a month. That's 10 hours of your time that you've saved for like $1 a month. It's actually a really good deal. How many people get paid like $1 for 10 hours of their time? I don't think so. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, donate or subscribe, because, hey, listeners are my employer. That's my philosophy. If you tell me to go interview somebody, I do it. I'm following your orders. Unless, of course, you know, the orders are completely unreasonable and you're nasty and insulting me and stuff like that. And in fact, that happened to me earlier today as well, Thomas. Somebody got really angry with me and flew off the handle because I don't know what I did. Like, I think they sent me an email requesting that I come on their radio show or something, and I didn't get it. Like, I'm more than a couple of months behind on answering emails, some longer. You know, I'm sorry, I'm just really overworked. Yet they took it as a personal offense and accused me of purposefully ignoring them and then started launching into a tirade of abuse. I was like, what did I do? You know, I feel like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. What is the problem with these people? Why is it that somebody thinks they're so important that for another person to perhaps not listen to them or not answer an email or something like that in a prompt enough fashion for them, that it's some kind of personal vendetta against them. What is that?
They don't understand that, like, when you get a little bit of fame, even a little bit, you get massive amounts of emails and private messages, and it's very difficult. I mean, I've got a huge backlog, but I really work hard to try and be a regular fella. I mean, because that's what I am. I enjoy that. I don't want to be detached from other people. I know you feel the same. It's just that you just want, I enjoy being just me. But when you open your email box in the morning, or you open your like a Facebook PM box, and it's like, you know, 60, 50, 25, 40 messages there, it's very difficult to answer them in the course of a day. And I think people, their feelings get hurt. I don't think they mean to be bad, but I think if they realize just how many emails we get, it was explained to them, they'd understand. They'd get it. But they just don't know, you know, how many demands are made upon you when you get a bit of a profile.
Mm. Well, I asked my listeners about this, and one of them threw up a familiar page to me. It's a Wikipedia entry on narcissism. And I remember it was a while back, Thomas, I sought your counsel because I saw this Wikipedia page and all these symptoms of narcissism, and I go, oh my God, I'm a narcissist. It scared the hell out of me. And then I went to you and you said, hey, it's just like the Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, list of things. Are you an alcoholic? Are you an alcoholic? According to them, everybody's a freaking alcoholic.
Yeah, and everybody's narcissistic to some degree. Anyone who says they're not narcissistic is a liar. There's different kinds of narcissism. There's benign, I've got an article on my website about this. There's benign narcissism, and there's pathological narcissism. Benign narcissism would be something like what Bruce Lee had. Bruce Lee arrived in America, he wanted to be a star, he knew he was the best, and he was the best. And he achieved it. Is there anything bad with that? No, it's all good stuff. It's all great stuff. That's healthy narcissism. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing bad about that. He actually, you know, he made lots of money, but he gave lots of people work. And his narcissism led to, you know, Chinese people, Orientals in America having a much better image than they didn't have. Say Muhammad Ali, I am the greatest. Well, guess what? Muhammad Ali was the greatest. Case closed. Doesn't make him a jerk. I mean, there's a guy who, even with Alzheimer's or whatever he has, Parkinson's, spends the rest of his life working for charity. You know, it's this healthy narcissism. And then when it goes really bad, it goes really bad. So it's like everything in life. We always have to constantly self-refer ourselves. And this goes to when we're looking at people and thinking, is this guy or she a psychopath? You know, we can't be assuming that they always are. We have to sit back for a second and say, oh, well, maybe I just don't like them, or maybe they pissed me off about something, or maybe they upset me in the past and I'm being a bit harsh. So self-referral is the most important thing you can do in your life, both for yourself and both for your relationship with others. And yes, you're absolutely right about those Wikipedia pages. We all have those things. We've all demonstrated that one pair part in our lives, but they haven't run away. It's a difference between, you know, smoking heroin once just to see what it was like, and then becoming a full-blown addict. It's, you know, injecting yourself, you know, in a shooting gallery somewhere. It's a different thing. You know, nobody is perfect. Nobody is a saint. Everyone is narcissistic to some degree. Yet we must exercise a measure of self-control. You see, we didn't come in this reality to be victims of it. We came into this reality to master it.
Yeah, I do believe that I'm one of those benign narcissists to agree. You know, I've got a very high opinion of myself and what I run myself down a lot, but that's just to keep myself in check, because, like, unless other people criticize me, I don't really know how to. And I think that's why I make friends with such honest people that pull me up on everything, because I just, you know, fear of, I don't know, letting my ego take over or something. You know what I mean? Like, you want to surround yourself with other people that don't. Well, you know how bad businessmen, big bad businessmen, surround themselves with yes men. Yeah. I do the direct opposite. I make sure that I surround myself with half yes men and half no men, like half to be the cheerleaders and half to pull me up when I'm really kind of going astray sort of thing. And if I'm doing something right, they'll all be in agreement. But if I'm doing something wrong, half will say yes, half will say no, and I'll usually listen to the people who are saying no.
Yeah, well, and also in your business, an element of narcissism is a good idea as well. It's just how it is. I mean, it's hard to get on the radio five nights a week. You almost have to be your own cheerleader in a way. So that's not pathological at all. It's healthy. It's just part of what you need to do. Just like a footballer or a rugby player, before he goes out to play a game, you know, he gets all wired up, he listens to the coach, they all pat each other on the back and they get all fired up, you know, we're the best, we're going to win today. That doesn't make them evil, that's just what it takes.
Oh, and the huge quantities of encouragement you get from all these emails and messages, if you get the chance to actually go to them, is really kind of uplifting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but unfortunately, when someone gets upset, it's just human nature to kind of remember that one, isn't it? You know,
always, always. I get like 60 messages saying, Vinny, you're great, I love your show, you've changed my life, it's been better, and one guy's a douchebag to me, and I forget about all the rest of them.
I know, man.
What the hell is that about?
It's, I don't know, that's an insecurity kind of thing, isn't it, I guess? It's almost like we have an innate kind of need to want to please everyone, where a psychopath has an innate need to only please themselves.
Well, maybe there's a lesson to be learned from that. What is it? If you're trying to please everybody, psychopaths are only trying to please themselves. I guess it's actually really about being part of a community, don't you think? And if you're, let's say you're in front of a town meeting or something, and the crowd's roaring with laughter because you're cracking them up. Or, on the other hand, if they're roaring and just going, boo, boo, what kind of a different sensation does that have to you? And you'll always remember the boos, but you'll never remember the cheering and the laughter. And I think it's because that's a little bit traumatic. Do you know what I mean? People tend to remember trauma much better. Like, I remember watching this television program and it was talking about extreme weather events and its effect on people's memory. And there was this one lady who knew exactly what floor on the parking building her car was, exactly what numbered space it was, and exactly what color the pole nearest to her car was, and exactly how far it was, right? Just because she got hit with a tornado that day, you know? Yeah. And all of a sudden, all your senses and all your memories come aligned. And people often don't know the difference. Like, if you've been cheated on before, for example, and your new partner starts exhibiting similar things to your previous partner, you know, like working late nights, so on and so forth, you know, classic move by somebody who's cheating on you, you'll suddenly automatically start accusing that person of cheating on you because they've been shafted round before. All these bad things that happen to you come back. It's like we can't get over it.
Yeah, we're almost like, you know, we almost like record our trauma and hold on to it very deeply. I think also that comes from our education system. I think the reason why we can remember a small amount of, you know, we can be traumatized by a small amount of criticism in the face of overwhelming accolades comes from our education system, our indoctrination as kids. You remember, like, you'd get, like, those A, B's and C's in all these subjects, and say you get an F in French or math or some other subject like that, and you're judged according to your negative, you know, scores on your test sheet. This evil education system we have, I think that's what screws people up. I think if people didn't go to school, they would take the positive comments and the negative ones, you know, with a pinch of salt and just be with them in a neutral kind of way. I think education is the real cause of that. The whole thing of exams and tests, and, you know, it's really screwed us up as people.
There's something the Greek says. He says, The most degrading thing you can do to somebody is degrade them on something.
Yeah. Degrade. Great. Excellent. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yep. That's schooling. Schooling is psychopathic. I mean, you know, state education, you know, that was invented by the Prussians in order to, like, create troops in the 1800s or the 1700s. And that's why it was so successful that they, you know, they battered the crap out of the French in the Franco-Prussian War, that education system was adopted everywhere. Testing, evaluation, grading. Smart kids end up becoming, you know, become civil servants, and they become like lawyers and professionals. Kids who aren't academically as clever or artistic, they put them into trade schools. That was all invented by a sort of a very vicious Prussian aristocratic system back in the early 1800s. You know, to actually create warriors, so they wouldn't, when you go into military service, they wouldn't require basic training, as they'd already been mind controlled and hardened up. And it was so successful for them in the Franco-Prussian War that it was actually incorporated to every single Western country after that. See, education is really damaged us in many ways, and it's also made us more vulnerable to the psychopath. You know, that's one of the reasons they get us. There's two reasons why they nail us, right? Why they get us. One is because we've been softened up by the abuses of education, the actualization of the left brain in terms of statistics, knowledge, times tables, and all this logarithms and nonsense you learn in school. That put you in a position that where your background perception, which has now been shown in the latest kind of neuroscience thing, I have an article on my website again, but your actual right brain is responsible for your background perception. Your left brain is responsible for your immediate perception. The reason why is if you were an ancient hunter at the side of a lake trying to spear a salmon, you'd have to also be aware that there might be a tiger behind you. I mentioned this at the beginning. But what's happened in our education system, brain lateralization has actually been damaged by the overemphasizing of statistics and numbers, and this makes us very easy to control. And the other one is entertainment: love songs, sappy love movies, and novels. Those two things together have softened us up, so the psychopath is much easier to target us.
You know, what occurred to me when you were saying that, it's like a farmer domesticating cattle. Cows are pretty dangerous if they're wild, if they've grown up in their own environments and things like that. You know, they've got horns. They'll charge you. They'll bull rush. You know, if you've ever played that game at school, you know, it's the same thing. If you get a calf from birth, and it's birthed into a herd of dairy cows who are very docile, who occasionally get electrocuted by fences, occasionally get prodded, but they more or less do exactly what they want, and they never hurt anybody unless it's really by accident kind of thing, so that the farmer can continue to milk them and eventually slaughter them and sell their carcass to a butcher.
Yeah. The sheep are like that too. I've noticed that the mountains, I'm in the mountains here, and a lot of farmers have sheep, and some of those sheep escape wild into the, like, top of the mountains, and they're absolute bastards. I mean, the wild sheep will, like, attack you. They'll actually come after you, the rams. They're very, very nasty. So it's just, that's what human beings are like, you know. They're like, we're sheep, or we're cows. We're domesticated on a tax farm called Earth.
Well, yeah, that's true. And they also favour the females and get rid of the males and the masculinity. We'll be right back.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder. murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist, parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Man, Thomas was just over the break, just going, Frank, it's nearly been 2 hours already. It's like, where did it all go? Just sort of appreciating, first of all, I've got to appreciate American Freedom Radio. I mean, big ups to AFR. Those guys work a lot harder than I do. I only have to do one show 5 days a week. They have to do everybody's show, like 6 days a week. It's freaking insane the amount of work those guys get done. And they archive it all at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. They're not messing around. And they do so much of it, basically, for nothing. And that's what's really spectacular about this network. And also, I really like the breaks, the ad breaks. You go, have you noticed, Thomas, how we've never really been cut off in the middle of a conversation that's only just starting to get going? It's more like you keep talking and talking and talking, the clock keeps going, and then, oh, there's a break, right? Long seconds.
Yeah, I've done FM and radio, FM and AM radio all over the world, and it's horrible. Like, you know, literally 2 minutes of talking and then straight to an ad. This format is much better.
It's fucking ridiculously awesome. Why other people have not done it yet? I can't believe it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's so freaking irritating listening to the other types of talk radio without this kind of clock on it. You know, it's just so much more easy to listen to. I mean, you know, you get to really fully form ideas in a conversation, and actually it goes somewhere before you get cut off as opposed to getting cut off before you've gone anywhere.
Yeah.
It's insane. Why do people want that kind of a format? Like, I've seen some networks close down. Like, I'll go on a guest. I think it might have been Orion. I forget which network, but a terrible ad structure, and it was just annoying the heck out of me just being a guest on it. Not because the host was bad or anything like that. You know, we were having a good time. It's just constant interruption. And they were telling me that, hey, everybody's complaining about it, but the people who are running it won't change it. And then next thing you know, here's Truth or News, radio network goes down for lack of money and support.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's related, but still. Anyway, totally off topic. Ladies and gentlemen, we've only got one more segment left with Thomas. So if you've got your hand on the dial, 218-339-8525, if you want to get in and ask him a question before we go to break. Other than that, we were talking before the break about how we're basically animals on a tax farm.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's what we are. That's the human race today, and that's why they call it human resources in a company. We're a resource, but essentially our nations, our countries, are psychopathic sort of structures, business structures, and your citizenship is little more than being an animal on a tax farm, you know, a revenue beast, to a revenue livestock to produce, you know, money for the actual control system. I mean, you know, and we've got to the situation now. I was reading some horrific stories lately in the Telegraph in the UK where some baroness there has actually said that people's patriotic duty would be to start killing yourself before you become a burden on the state because, you know, when you get old, you get Alzheimer's and we'll be spending all this money on healthcare to keep you alive. Well, when I read that, you know, my attitude is I am a burden on the state, and I'm very proud of being a burden on the state, and I'm going to be as unruly and as ungovernable as possible. And I, till my very last breath, when I depart this reality, I will make life miserable for politicians and civil servants. So, you know, thank you, Baroness, for saying that, because you've given me a reason why we should go on, and the reason is that the state is not, you know, the state is subservient to me. I'm not subservient to the state, and I am your burden, and you better get used to it. And we all should be like that. Like, I think it was Gore Vidal who said, you know, the true mark of a patriot is someone who's very rude to their government.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the interesting irony here, is that, you know, you should kill yourself before you become a burden to the state. But the state's been a burden on my life my entire existence.
Yep, I mean, we were just talking about the education system there. There's a classic example of it. You know, when we were kids, we wanted to play in the woods. We wanted to, like, play with our dog, have a good time, go fishing, go swimming, whatever, play football. And what did we have to do? Spend, you know, many hours a day during the winter months and, you know, most of the spring and the autumn being indoctrinated by the state. The state was a burden upon us. They owe us. We don't owe them.
Yeah. And they forced me to hang out with people who sucked and were boring and stupid and couldn't teach me a frickin' thing. The only thing school taught me is that I didn't want to go to school.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I had one or two good teachers, but the majority were absolute idiots. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's true. They were school teachers because they couldn't do anything else. It was as simple as that. And they, you know, the whole thing of, like, you know, you must be a good citizen. To me, the mark of a good citizen is someone who actually, you know, ignores the government and does their own thing and doesn't harm anybody. That's the whole thing. Don't harm anybody. But yeah, you're supposed to be patriotic. And if your country goes to war or, you know, starts trouble on an ethnic minority, that's being patriotic. I'm sorry. No, I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing that gets my patriotism juices flowing stronger than when we're picking on minorities. Now, the other irony is that when you get a whole bunch of minorities together and you get diversity, it actually divides the entire society along racial lines, but under the guise of everybody being accepting and playing together. Studies have proven that if a culture is basically mono, you know, there's basically one culture or whatever, the amount of social disharmony and things like that is virtually nil.
Yep.
And now what's happening in the this new great global village that we've got, talking about diversity and how good it is for everybody, crime's up. Oh, no, crime's not actually that up. It's all been going down. Fear of crime is up spectacularly. Yes,
there's another aspect to that as well. It's not diversity that's the problem. It's multiculturalism, forced multiculturalism, that's the problem. Human beings of different races, religions, and groups, if they're just not forced to tolerate each other, will live in harmony, fine. You look at these amazing melting pots, Lower East Side of Manhattan, East End of London, even Mumbai, all Hong Kong, all Singapore, all these different groups live together, no problem. It's only when the government gets involved and starts forcing this thing called tolerance on everyone, or forcing this political correctness on everyone, that the problems begin. Human beings of all races, when left alone, are fine. It's when the bureaucrats, the archons, when the civil servants, and when all these quangos, NGOs, and all these government projects to integrate, to force multiculturalism come in, that the tensions begin. And that they're run by the psychopaths. The problem is not the people, not the minorities, not diversity, but this need to force integrate them. That's the problem. And the reason, you know, you see, psychopaths are very conscious of people's differences. We're not. Children, when they're born, you can put out children of all different races in a room, and they're all getting on fine. It's only when they get into the school system that they become aware that they're different religions and different races. That's when the problem begins. Again, the system is the problem, not the human beings.
Yeah, exactly. And we were having a discussion about race over one of the breaks, and we both kind of realized that, oh my God, if we were having this conversation as two white guys talking about ethnicity and things like that, we'd be hounded and louder, you know, and attacked and demonized and so on and so forth for being racist. When we're just talking about race, we're not talking negatively about anybody at all whatsoever. Have no problem with people being from other ethnicities. What would be the problem is ridiculous. And what I found, and as you're saying that, socialism I have seen a lot of socialist movements in this country, you know, fighting homophobia, fighting racism, fighting this, that, and the other. And it's the exact symptom that you're talking about there, forcing tolerance.
Yeah.
Tolerate everybody, or else we're going to protest outside your restaurant.
Well, I've never met a socialist who wasn't born with a silver spoon in their mouth. I mean, you look at the, I mean, I'm probably going to flag, I hope no one in Ireland is listening to this. The Socialist Workers' Party in Ireland is made exclusively of people who have never worked a day in their lives. They're all like doctors. They're all doctors and lawyers, daughters and sons, who have this idea that socialism is like, yeah, telling poor, you know, poor common people to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's nuts. Right. Well, anyway, like we were saying over the break, anybody who takes anything to an extreme is an extremist, right? And extremism doesn't really benefit anybody except somebody who wants all the power and control for themselves, like a psychopath. Thomas, today has been a really great show. Thanks mostly in part to you and the listeners for listening in. Thank you so much for doing so. And American Freedom Radio for putting on this wonderful platform. Truth. And just want to keep this out for your listening pleasure. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thomas Sheridan Art. Thank you.
Thomas Sheridan Art.com is the website. The next show. See you next week.